Good morning. My name is Ben Choi. I'm a director of HIV testing in the New York City Health Department in the Bureau of HIV/AIDS Prevention and Control. And what I'm going to do this morning is a little different than the other presenters. I'm going to talk about HIV testing trends in New York City before and after legislation that's mandating the offer of HIV testing. Just to start, I'm going to take us on memory lane. So back in the 1980s was the first HIV cases that was reported, and it recounted sort of like cases not only in New York, in Los Angeles, but also in New York City, and we started HIV/AIDS surveillance. And this is just to give you an idea of how it all started in New York City. In the beginning, we just had pieces of paper, and we have only a few cases. Unfortunately, this is far from what we're doing now, where we have thousands of people who are affected with HIV. In addition, we started mandating AIDS case reporting in 1983. And then in 1998, the New York State legislature enacted a law to promote routine HIV screening, and that is the public health law, Article 27F, which defines and kind of defines what we can do and not do in terms of HIV testing in New York State. And I just want to remind you that in 1998, this is a time when there's still a lot of stigma in terms of HIV. Many people, when they're first diagnosed with HIV, do not have many options, and many of them may die within sort of months or within a year of their diagnosis. So it's really wanting to make sure that those people who are consenting to HIV tests really understand the gravity of the decision that they're making. And the legislatures really want to do that by requiring that there's a pre- and post-test counseling that must be done face-to-face, which means a 20-minute or a 40-minute or even an hour. However, in addition, they require that a written consent be signed prior to testing. It can't be verbal. And also, specific pieces of information needs to be provided to the client prior to testing. And what it required was a signing of a form like this, which lists a lot of different information about HIV. HIV is caused by a virus, how you can get it. And then after they understand all of this, then they sign this, which makes sense conceptually in the early sort of 1980s and 1990s. But as more and more people test, having a 20, 40-minute encounter face-to-face every single time, especially if you're an MSM, this may be the third or fourth time you're testing in a year, it did not make a lot of sense. Just in terms of legislation, too, other things that impacted us was in a baby AIDS bill. So it was legislation that was introduced by Assemblywoman Nettie Myerson in 1993, which was passed in 1996. Basically, the context was that even though voluntary HIV screening was already recommended for women, pregnant women in your state, this law really wanted to fill the gap of those kids whose mothers didn't have an HIV status. We don't want to sort of miss those kids. So what the law required was that women who present to labor and delivery without any HIV testing status, that the kids would be mandated to be tested for HIV regardless of the mother's consent. So it's a mandatory testing of the child in the context of if the mother decides not to test. So and basically what we found is that in 2005, 95% of the women who were pregnant in New York State, most of them do consent to HIV testing, but there were a proportion of almost 12,000 people who did not have any testing done and they need to be tested at the time of delivery. And what we found was that with the introduction of sort of the recommendation of routine screening, but also the mandatory screening of those kids whose mothers were not tested, we saw a dramatic reduction in terms of the number of mother-child transmission in New York City. We're talking over 300 cases to now we're really talking about the number of cases you can count on one hand. And now we're shifting from reducing perinatal transmission to really eliminating perinatal transmission in New York State altogether. So this is a dramatic sort of background in terms of thinking of how legislation may be able to impact sort of public health policy and sort of action. So in the context then, we really need to think about changing the way that we got consent in New York State. And certainly in 2006, CDC released revised recommendations for HIV screening in healthcare settings. And those new recommendations says that there should be routine voluntary HIV screening for all persons aged 13 to 64 in healthcare settings. And what was a slight departure from before was that now these people should be offered testing regardless of their risk. So you don't need to ask them if they have sex with men, if they do injection drugs. You just offer as a routine part of care. But also the recommendation says that patients should just be notified that they're going to get testing done, and unless they say no, they'll just be automatically tested, which unfortunately for us in New York State at the time was not allowed because 27F says that we have to get a mandatory written consent from the patients. So even in advance of the CDC recommendations, New York City has been trying to change a consent law, and this is just a headline from early 2006 where HIV activists were saying the New York City Health Department just stop gutting our informed consent law because we're trying to change the consent to allow for different options. So there was a little contention between the health department, the medical community, and also the community-based organizations in terms of what is the reasonable way to obtain consent in New York City. So fast forward several years, all of a sudden in 2010, the norm in terms of getting HIV screening has really changed in terms of many states at that point have switched over to not requiring HIV testing consent or really reducing what's required. And as a result of all these changing atmospheres, we passed a law regarding HIV testing in New York State. And one of the key things that came out of the change in legislation now is not only are we changing the way that we get consent, but now healthcare providers in New York State are required to offer HIV testing to all their patients aged 13 to 64 in healthcare settings, and it includes inpatient ward of a hospital, emergency department of a hospital, outpatient departments of hospitals offering primary care, and also freestanding diagnostic and treatment centers also offering primary care services. And what this law basically did was it made New York State the first state in the nation to mandate an offer of HIV tests. It also expanded our HIV testing consent options. So not only do we have written consent, we're allowed to obtain oral consent for tests that can produce a result in 60 minutes or less, or agencies can integrate the HIV consent as part of the general medical consent. And as part of the law, it also required there to be an evaluation of the HIV test. And what's interesting is that even though the law was passed in 2010, the regulations were not actually published until November 2011 and was not formally adopted in 2012. So there's a lot of time between when things start, when it was enacted, and actually momentum kind of picked up. So what we're really looking at then is, in this context, what were the HIV testing rates in New York City in ambulatory settings before and after this testing law? And we're really, what we're doing is we're looking at sort of an evaluation opportunity because within the health department, Mayor Bloomberg in 2005 set up a Bureau of the Primary Care Information Project, whose goal is to really improve the quality of care in medically underserved areas through the use of information technology, and really talking about implementation of electronic medical records in healthcare settings. And as part of this, we really talked to the practicing clinics in terms of using the EHR to really improve certain important public health measurements, including HIV testing, which the agencies could institute prompts so that when providers see a person who hasn't been tested for HIV in a year, they would get a prompt to say, this person hasn't been tested, you should offer testing to them. And as part of this, there's over 62 providers who joined our networks, and then it's a mixture of independent practices, community health centers, and also hospitals. And what is unique to this is that as part of their agreement with the City Health Department is that we're able to access the clinic information through a secure automated exchange of data so that we as a health department can kind of query that information of different health conditions. And then without the clinic needing to do anything, we can query that. But to maintain security, no protected health information is transmitted to us. And in terms of what the hub is really covers, it's about 620 practices that serves 1.5 million patients in 2012. So what we did in our evaluation is we asked the hub how many patients each quarter had an HIV test returned electronically, and then how many patients had at least one visit each quarter. So basically, every patient that was seen each quarter, how many of them actually had a test ordered and then received? Of course, the limitation is that if a test was ordered on paper or was ordered at another site outside of the practice, we were not able to capture that. And what we did is once we got the data, we pulled quarterly testing rates per practice stratified by the three different age groups, 13 to 17, 18 to 64, and 65 and above. And the reason for that is that the testing law covers those who are 13 to 64, and we think that those who are 13 to 17 have different issues than adults, so we want to look at them differently. We use a generalized estimating equation, GEE model, to test change in likelihood of testing before and after the law, and we got odds ratios, and we include in a final model Bureau of the clinic, community health center status, baseline performance, age category, and interaction of age category and time. In terms of definitions, our baseline was before the change in law, and then we included the period of quarter three 2010 to quarter four 2011 as a time of implementation, and our post-law is 24 after. Interestingly enough, even though we have our implementation time was 2011, the regs have not been issued. So some, as a result, just keep in mind that some of these agencies may not have done anything because they're still waiting for the regs to be issued. I'm kind of running out of time, so I'm going to quickly talk. Basically, we had 217 practices. Most of them were small practices. And even though we define a small practice as having less than 10 FTEs, really the mean number of providers is 1.6. So really, when we talk about small practices, really talking about solo or practices with two people. And what we found was, surprise, the likelihood of testing increased post-law. So we didn't really see any significant change in terms of testing trends before the law was implemented, but after the law there was a significant likelihood of testing increase, and it's increased 200% post-law. Just graphically, kind of looking at this, we are showing the testing rates between those who are 13 to 17, 18 to 64, 65 plus, and what you see is that for those who are not impacted by a law, those who are 65 and older, you really don't see much in terms of an increase. But for those who are impacted, both 13 to 17 and 18 to 54, you did see a big increase. You may say that you can also see that there's already an increasing trend of HIV testing already in New York City, but we think that, and we'll look at it a little bit more, that certain groups actually during the implementation period, which is not kind of showing, that there is a rise. Also, the other way that we looked at it is we want to sort out the small practices compared to community health centers. And what we see is that really in the small practices, those practices that really had a mean of like two providers, we didn't see as much in terms of increase, but really we saw a lot of increase in the community health centers. And I think intuitively it makes sense in terms of for solo practitioners, you're a one or two person show, and there's a lot of things that's going on. If you're not all that inclined to do testing, you may not change. But for practices where you have group dynamics, where you have different people who may be supporting you, and there may be sort of like some camaraderie, but also competition, that may kind of spur testing that wouldn't otherwise happen. And lastly, we also looked at, is there a difference in terms of different boroughs or different counties within New York City? And we did find that there is a very much a difference in terms of that. And we found that the borough of Manhattan, also the borough, the Bronx, showed a significant increase in HIV testing. And what is interesting is that in Manhattan, there's always been a lot of testing in the borough. But during this time, we also had an initiative for HIV testing called the Bronx Knows. We really looked at increasing HIV testing in that borough, and we're seeing that those are the two boroughs that are most impacted. Just kind of looking forward in terms of how this impacted it, we looked at sort of like the testing practice rates, percentage of patients tested. The darker the color, the higher. So we, by different age groups, 13, 17, 18, 64, and higher. And as we move in time, what we see is that we do see an increase in terms of testing. Those who are 13 to 17 and 18 to 64, but we see a bigger increase in those parts of the city that has more of sort of like baseline infrastructure for testing to begin with. So there are some limitations to our study. There has been some changing documentation patterns that we've noticed. This is looking at practice level data so that we don't see the individual provider. So if there's two providers, one who's doing really well and one who's doing not very well, they may kind of cancel each other out. We also don't have the ability to see lab results from other practices, and certainly this is only a sampling, so this is not representative of all practices in New York City. Also, the thing to think about is that during this time frame, not only is a lot happening, but there's a lot of efforts to increase HIV testing, including CDC's expanded testing initiative, and also our testing initiative in the Bronx. Conclusions, HIV testing improved rapidly. During that time, we see the most in the groups that's impacted, but also in areas that's already sort of getting focus efforts from the city health department. There has been existing trends in terms of HIV testing, and what's interesting is that community health centers improved much greatly, more so than the small practices, and tested more patients at every time point. And unfortunately, what we also see is that the data shows that while many New York City residents are offered testing, there's still a lot of them who don't know. And if we just relied on the testing law alone, we're not going to do it. There's still a lot of work in terms of getting more providers to screen. Also, it also requires that patients need to ask their providers for a test. I just want to thank my co-authors.
One quick question.
Yeah. So you said some providers, despite the mandate, are not asking people for tests. I've heard that from patients. And I was wondering, are there any changes to the law, or how is that going to be enforced, or how do you increase people who get the opportunity to see providers actually being screened for this, since it is the law?
So like most laws, it's made by legislatures and is not funded, and there really isn't a lot of teeth that's written in the law. The regulations did have some, but what we're really telling people now is the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force makes screening a requirement or a high recommendation, and also now this is the standard of care for New York State, and actually there is something in the docket right now in terms of provider being sued for missing a case of HIV in the person that's been seen. So what we're really saying is, there is this law, but now with the standard, there's also a risk of lawsuit. And what we're finding is that hospitals and risk managers are much more, their ears perk up when they hear sort of like, not only do we need to do it because of the law, but because of the risk of lawsuit.
Thank you.